This is the beginning of Class 7.
Sasi Bhagi Jushimeta Jham Vira Vinci Nyamde Yampadi Sange Shindu Mithe Uwagi Jogunanda Shimla
Gacha means, Kylie knows, we had it once before. And the people from the first course, I hope, know it. Wait, who will I remember? This is still wrong. Remember Gacha?
I remember the word.
Gacha means the thing that we deny. It means the thing that we say doesn't exist. It's the thing that emptiness is empty of. It's a self-existing thing. That doesn't exist anyway.
That one ain't.
Can you repeat it?
God means deny. And you'll see it oftentimes, they'll say refute. And Ja means to be object to be refuted. So if I say Gacha means self-existing thing. Gacha means a thing which exists by itself. And there's no such thing. So Gacha, when you say emptiness means something's missing. Like today my Lama sent me to take the garbage out and I pick up the can and it's empty. So I'm expecting garbage, but it's empty. So that then the gacha in that case was garbage. So gacha means the thing that we say doesn't exist, the thing which we deny. Gacha means that.
Object being negated.
You hear all sorts of different translations.
And this is the first
point. I call it the object.
I don't
think
it's this good.
It's the thing we say doesn't exist. It's
the thing what Buddha says.
All Buddhists. It's what emptiness is empty of.
Self-nature.
Yeah. You can call it self-nature. We're going to go into it very deeply. I mean, different schools call it different things.
The object of ignorance.
Long story. Okay. Yeah.
They
call it object to be refuted, object to be denied, object to be negated.
And this is what varies between among the schools.
Oh, big differences between the schools. Yeah.
Right, but it's the same word.
Yeah, sure. This word is the same. Gotcha. What we're trying to deny. what we're trying to say doesn't exist is all is different for each school. Okay. Gotcha.
Are we still wearing the same hat?
We're wearing Svartantrika hat for this whole course. Okay. And here you're going to get a good dose of Svartantrika. Okay, that's a little bit different from...
As Svartantriks, do we agree with ourselves?
Well, sure, you have to defend it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's gacha. Gacha is what emptiness is empty of. And the very first section in studying gacha is identifying what is the gacha. That's the first part. I mean, first of all, before you can understand what, you have to understand what the gacha is. But,
well, self-existent nature is a word.
You have to understand that before you can understand emptiness. Because emptiness means
the absence of that.
So if you don't know what it's absent of, then you can't study emptiness. The book gives an example. It says, if you want to study, if you want to know if there's a water pitcher in this room, you have to have a mental picture of a water pitcher. If you don't know what a water pitcher is, you can't realize its absence in this room. And that's the same thing. If you don't know what the gacha is, you'll never understand emptiness. If you don't know what a self-existent thing, should I say, is, or... it's supposed to be.
Would be like if it could be.
Okay, what it would be like if it did exist, then you can't understand emptiness. You have to have a good idea of what a self-existent thing is. Okay, otherwise you can't, you'll never understand its emptiness. And then they always quote two lines from Shantideva, they're in your handout, but they say, Gakpe mula ma rekpa, desi deing lume timayin. Which is very famous, good way to start a debate in monastery. Until you are able to find what it is that you think exists, you will never be able to realize that it doesn't exist. So you have to understand what it is, what a self-existent thing would look like if a self-existent thing existed. And that's why you have to study gacha. Before you study the proofs for emptiness, you have to study what they are trying to deny.
Okay. When you first start to study this, don't you get the feeling that it's kind of semantic?
Yeah, at first. And it's a kind of blessing. It's a kind of result of your good deeds when it becomes very meaningful to you. They say in Tibetan, Gyawa Me, if it sounds to you like semantics, or if it sounds like just arguing about words, you're missing something. And it does at the beginning. And before we study Madhyamika in the monastery, before we study emptiness, we have to do all these practices. I mean, they stop for 6 months or 8 months, and they just try to get enough goodness to understand. They just pray for understanding emptiness. Rinpoche, or my lama, he went to some cave, and before he opened the book, he did all these meditations, and prayers that he would have enough goodness to catch it. And you find students that don't. Yeah.
There's something that I really don't understand, and okay. It's between the Hinayana and the Mahayana with respect to understanding emptiness, goodness. Because it's a different kind of merit
that
you're accumulating.
Not really. I mean, any kind of merit is fine. There's better ones than... there's more powerful ones and less powerful ones. But
they both work...
I mean, giving fruit to a god... Oh, sure. Correctly. Yeah, any good deed. Yeah. Any good deed helps a lot. But like, we're studying logic nowadays, and logic seems very dry and very irrelevant. But if you have a kawa, if you have the goodness in you, then when you study it, it blows your mind. You suddenly realize that you can prove past lives. You can prove the existence of emptiness and things like that. So it's just some kind of two different people can go through the same subject and catch different things. You know, it's like people look at artwork or music. Okay, so that's gacha. Gacha, if it existed, would exist in a way which was opposite to the way that things exist, what you call conventionally or what we call deceptively. Okay, I'll say that again.
Thank you.
If it existed, it would have to exist in a way that was the opposite of the way things actually exist. Mm-hmm. And when I say actually exist, I say deceptively exist.
Right, which is the way we see things.
Like that. The way that things conventionally exist. I'll say it again. If the Gaksha did exist, it would exist in a way that was the opposite of the way that things really do conventionally exist. So first you have to study how do things exist conventionally. I don't like to call it conventionally. I prefer deceptively, because that's the word. Okay, they call it deceptively. Did I lose anybody? You all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Excuse me?
No, it seems to be not. In other words, you're trying to say.
Right. If it existed.
If it existed.
It would have to exist in a way that was the opposite of the way.
But I thought that you were saying that what it is a deceptive thing, and you're saying if it existed, then if this deceptive thing existed, it would be the opposite of a deceptive thing.
No, all things around us are deceptive, and if it existed, it would have to be something that doesn't exist deceptively. It doesn't exist deceptively. It doesn't exist at all. The Gaksha doesn't exist at all.
Any more than anything else does.
Oh, yeah, no, sure. All other things that you see exist deceptively. The Gaksha doesn't exist deceptively or ultimately. It just doesn't exist.
Okay.
It's a self-existent thing. It's a boy with two heads. It's an elephant in this room right now. It's, I don't want to say an honest politician. I don't mean that. It's just a thing that doesn't exist. But you better know what it looks like, because supposedly you see everything this way. Supposedly you are often seeing gakchas when you are angry or when you have desire. I would say, it's very interesting, I would say you can't have an emotion that is negative unless you are focused on the gaksha. That's pretty heavy. Mm.
Why would a positive emotion be different?
Well, I mean, positive, like Mingmei Ningjie, like the ultimate kind of compassion understands the emptiness of the topic. That's what I'm saying. But most, yeah, any normal positive emotion also. But the emotions that get you in trouble, desire, hatred, jealousy, these, at the moment that you have them, you must be focused on the Gaksha. And that's why when you understand that there is no Gaksha, you can reach Nirvana. That's why you can become an Arahant. A photo story. Photo destroyer is the Tibetan translation of arhat, and there are roots, Sanskrit roots arh. They can be related to enemy. So the Tibetans call arhat enemy destroyer. The word in Sanskrit also means worthy one. One who is worthy. Arh means he who is worthy. So sometimes if you're reading a Tibetan translation of Tibetan, and even a Tibetan book, it'll say, arhats are arhats because they are worthy of all the world to bow down to. And you don't know why. So why did they come here? You know, in Tibetan, the pun doesn't come out. You see, in Sanskrit, it's arhat, it's arh for the world to bow down to. And then the Tibetans just translated it. You know, enemy killers are worthy, and then you missed the pun.
Oh, can we go back even further? On the two, are the self-made Buddhas also arhats when they reach?
Yeah.
So they're both those paths end in arhatship.
Yeah.
And what are
the two?
Oh, okay. I think we have four names.
Well, it's the three.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so number four is arhat. Number four. These are the four results of the past. I did not teach you last week. I was supposed to teach you last week.
Four results.
Four results of the past. You haven't had this yet.
Which path?
The general Buddhist path. It's a good question. I'm not talking the five paths. I'm not talking the three paths. I'm talking the general Buddhist practice. Normally, path is a mental state, but this time we're talking the method. The result of that method is that...
You start with number four, number
I'll
one?
Start with number one. Okay.
Okay.
Number one is called stream enterer.
Stream enterer, these things.
Stream enterer, one who is entering the stream.
What stream would it be?
It's the stream that where the you yeah very yeah you're no longer having it's the stream, it's the immediate, it's the process at which you are on your way out. You can call it on your way out. I almost prefer that. You've just reached the first step of being on your way out of suffering. This is a person who has perceived emptiness directly, so you could guess down now. What else happens when you reach Tantra?
The individual analysis of the clarion truth.
But I mean the first instant of Tonglan.
Of what?
Of the path of seeing.
And say that word again, please.
Tonglan. You become an Arya, what we call realized person. You reach the first Bodhisattva.
Become.
What else? You get rid of forever your belief in self, etc., etc.
Anyway,
this is what happens. Yeah, yeah.
Is when that you
result number one, result of the path, is that you become a stream enterer. You are on your way out. You're definitely on your way out.
Which means you've seen emptiness directly.
Right.
First step,
and that's what stream enterer means.
Is
that's
that natural nirvana?
You perceive natural nirvana.
Out of what? The samsara?
Sure. Yeah, suffering. The second one is called a once returner.
Once
returner. Someone who's going to come back one more time.
Back to the earth or just anywhere?
This doesn't mean what it sounds like, okay? This means to the desire realm. Okay. You will only have to take at the most one more birth in the desire realm. No, it could be in any of the six forms, but I assume he's good enough that he's gonna be a human. Yeah.
Is that nirvana with something left over?
No. Not according to our present school. Yeah, yeah.
Now, does this also mean it's going to be the next birth, or could there be several births in the form realm?
I believe normally it's the next one. But it's in this book.
Can you say the six desire realms? Are you talking about the six
levels of the desire realm? Right?
I'm talking about the six different realms.
Well, the desire realm has all six births in it.
Oh,
yeah. Form and formless realm only have the pleasure being birth. That's another thing.
So it just means samsara.
No. It means he might take a lot of births in the form realm and the formless realm, but he only has to come back to this realm one more time. This realm is the lowest realm. This is the realm where we live in. It's called desire realm because if you have your life is run by a desire for food and sex. Basically, that's the way the first time.
But you said it's not the human realm.
Humans live in the desire realm, but so do animals and hell beings and predators. And the lowest devas and the lowest pleasure beings live here also. But the higher pleasure beings live in the form realm. So this realm has all six kinds of birth, but the other two realms only have one kind of birth.
And this is what you see when you perceive emptiness, you know?
We weren't talking about that. I don't know how we got on that. Oh, you only have to come back here one more time. It's a matter of bad thoughts. It's a matter of afflictions, mental afflictions. You can only be born in this realm if you have a pretty heavy dose of bad thoughts in you. And as you're traveling along the path of habituation, you start to overcome those bad thoughts so that you don't have to take birth here again.
I've never understood how you can achieve nirvana from the god realms. They're so awful.
It's It's pretty difficult.
Well, why wouldn't it be more desirable
to be more desirable? I'm not sure. You have to take verse in the corner. I have to check it out.
I would think it would be beneficial.
It's difficult from that realm to take a, to reach nirvana. It's true, because it's so pleasant.
What's an arya again?
Someone who's perceived into misdirection.
No, not an arhat, an arya.
Arya has perceived into misdirection. We didn't get to the arhat yet. Okay, so that's the first and second results, right? Now we're on number three, right? He's called a non-returner. He will not have to take another birth in the desire realm.
He is a non-returner.
That's number three.
I'm sorry.
Yes, non-returner. Not coming back again to this realm.
Desire realm.
Yeah. Desire realm is supposed to be the best one for achieving enlightenment because it's...
You're
intelligent. It's not so much suffering that you can't think straight, which is the problem with the hell realms. But it's also not so much pleasure that you can't think straight, which is the problem with the higher realms, with the two higher realms. So it's supposed to be a good mix of suffering and leisure of the time and the brains to think in this realm. In the hells, you have a good dose of suffering. But
you mean the human realm is
Yeah.
You said the desire realm.
Well, the human segment of the desire realm.
The middle part. The upper middle.
What did you start to say about the
They can't achieve any lams normally because they
have
so much pain that they can't think straight. Their ability to think is impaired by the in tremendous pain. They can't think straight. Although there is a debate about whether the Buddha ever... There is a scripture that says that he achieved bodhicitta in the hell realm. But the Abhidharma says it wasn't quite like that. But that's another story. So that's a non-returner. And then the fourth result is arhat, is a foe destroyer. And the enemy is your bad thoughts and their seeds. So becoming an arhat, becoming a foe destroyer, and reaching nirvana are all the same thing.
The enemy, the foe destroyer, is your...
Yeah, when you say foe destroyer,
right.
Who is it? Who's the foe? The foe is your bad thoughts.
And
the seeds for those.
It's bad thoughts and seeds?
Right.
Both?
Right.
Not the actions, just the thoughts.
Right. But actually, you can't collect the actions. You can't collect karma per se if you don't have these bad thoughts.
What was that session on the results of the three paths or the two paths?
This was it. I don't remember the question. Let me see.
Describe the three main parts of the nirvana.
Oh, that was
now.
I'm sorry. What's the foe destroyer? What are the three results of each?
What is a foe destroyer? That's result number four. And what are the three results of the path that lead up to it? That was, you know, extreme entering, once returner, non returner. Extreme entering, once returner, and non returner.
So
the results of those paths, you need
to bring them Buddha too?
It's not presented that way. It's not. This is mainly taught in the Amidama, which is in the
Are we only ever going to be, one only ever apply these labels and categorizes things this way when we're talking about low vehicle practitioners, right?
Mainly.
Bodhisattvas.
But they apply to bodhisattvas too.
They do.
Yeah.
So how do you know what they're...
I don't think it's necessarily track specific, you know what I mean? I've never seen a... It is presented in the... It's called Ginden Nishu, the 20 different divisions of practitioners. You study that maybe in about 2 years. But it breaks it all down into, you know, arhats, Hinayana arhats, Mahayana arhats, like this. You get 20 different divisions, actually. It's called Ginden Nishu.
Because usually you see these terms being used only in connection with Hinayana.
Normally, but it's not... No, obviously you could have a kind of Buddhist practice. Okay, back to the subject.
Gotcha.
So, gotcha is a non-existent thing. If it did exist, it would have to exist in the way, in an opposite way from the way all these things really do exist.
That's a rabbit with
it. Effectively.
porn.
So, we want to know, how did the subconscious explain how we see deceptive reality? Okay. How do they explain how we see the things around us? Because according to them, and according to us too, the gacha should exist the opposite way. If it existed. Got that? That's a little tricky.
So they're saying we see it as an ultimate nature.
No.
No,
the
gacha
would be opposite that?
No. They say, study how you see the things around you. Because if the gacha existed, if a self-existent thing existed, it should exist in the opposite way. From the way you really see the things around you. By the way, what do the higher Madhyamika people say? How do things exist according to them?
Nominally.
Nominally. Mingde Shaktam. Just from your perceptions. And that's what you studied in your last course. Now you're going to get confused because you're dropping down a score. And it's good. And then you sharpen your knowledge.
Not just from your perceptions, from your labeling.
Well, if the word perception...
You make it sound like mind only.
It is pretty much that. When they say label, they mean perceptions. Mingde Shaktam, the word de, da, name, there means perception.
I thought that we perceive things as deceptive reality, and that's the way in which they do not exist. But they do exist as ultimate reality, and therefore,
no, these things. You could say they're dependent origination.
And they do.
We're going to study their dependent origination. How is it that they really do exist?
And is that what we're?
They have two kinds of existence. Yeah. One is their ultimate existence, which is totally, totally different.
And
you'll perceive that when you reach Tongra. Yeah. But then they also have a lower level of existence, which is their dependent origination. That they really have.
And we're not trying to refute that.
Not at all.
Oh, I thought that's what we're
if the gacha existed, it would be the opposite of that. That's the point. Did everybody catch that?
No. I got it up to the very end.
Okay. Things have two kinds of existence.
Mm-hmm.
Their ultimate existence. And they're deceptive existence. But they're both valid, and they're both real.
I don't understand how this table or our bodies have any ultimate existence, except as a mind stream. That's all that I've understood so far.
We will get to it. First we have to study what they do have. I mean, we'll study the lower existence that they have first. Their lower existence, their lower level of existence, is what we call dependent origination, or deceptive reality. So you can call it that. Their deceptive reality, their apparent reality, the reality that we see from day to day. We're going to study that.
Oh, you're not going to explain it now?
I'm going to explain it right now. Oh. By the way, do you currently even perceive that? Do you currently even understand how you see the things around you? Much less emptiness. Forget this higher reality. The normal reality around you, do you really understand what's going on? No. You don't even understand its dependent origination.
Michael, what do you mean?
When you understand that, you're pretty high already.
What do you mean? You don't really understand what's going on.
I'll talk about it. When you really understand how you're perceiving, forget emptiness, which you can only perceive in deep meditation and directly, okay? Talking about this reality around you right now, you don't even know what you're doing. You don't even know how your mind is making this up right now, or how your mind is establishing these things right now. You don't even know that. You're not even aware of what you're doing.
Well, somebody would say the eye does that. The light.
We're talking about it. We're going to talk about it. Okay. Yeah.
You go so far as to say the reason we call deceptive reality is because.
Stop right there. Because. We're going to get to that. And the Sotantics have their special ideas about it. They, just to anticipate myself, okay, they call it deceptive reality because the mind which establishes it is deceptive. And they have a different concept.
Oh,
their concept.
In a sense, what I was leading to was that it's the gacha which sort of makes deceptive reality deceptive, because far from believing that it's the wrong thing, we believe it's the right thing.
Different subject. That's a long way down the road, and it's not quite like that. but it's close. Yeah.
So I'm trying to see the distinction between deceptive reality and gotcha.
Good.
What is it?
No, that's fine.
What is it?
Deceptive reality is what's really happening.
I see this vase
right here. What your mind is really, the reality that your mind is actually seeing.
So I see this vase. I see it as a vase.
That's not a gotcha. Why?
Because it has a dependent or origination.
It exists. Yeah. Teacher, why? Because I see it and I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
And that's the proof of something existing in Buddhism. If you see it and you're not sick or crazy or hallucinating or drugged,
so that
can't be the gotcha.
So what would be the gotcha aspect of this vase?
The way we think.
No, that's what I'm going to talk about right now.
Yeah,
To discuss
the gotcha aspect of this vase, you have to understand how it really does exist to you. Because the gotcha would be the opposite.
Which is not its ultimate issue.
Okay, so in a sense, emptiness is the absence of the gotcha.
Yeah.
And gotcha is something that would exist in a way that was the opposite of the way this vase really does exist.
I was thinking emptiness was the opposite of deceptive reality.
No, deceptive reality is fine. Deceptive reality and ultimate reality are good friends. They both get along with each other, they both exist, everything has both. No problem. Okay. It's deceptive, but it's not non-existent.
Deceptive reality and what are good friends?
Ultimate reality.
And so the gotcha is non-existent?
Yeah, forget it. He's out of the picture. You know, deceptive reality and ultimate reality are two good friends. And gotcha ain't got no reality at all. Gotcha doesn't even exist. But there's something in your mind that takes this vase to be self-existent. And we want to identify what's that like.
The self-existence, which is deceptive reality.
No.
What do you mean by self-existence?
We're going to talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Running in
circles here. Deceptive reality means perceiving it as self-existent.
No.
We'll
talk about it.
Let him talk.
Right.
Yeah, really. I mean, we're going in circles. We're going to go in circles.
Say lo.
Lo.
Numela.
Numela.
Nowe.
Nowe.
Wangi.
Wangi. Shaktam.
This is how things exist around you, the lower level of reality, what we call deceptive reality. If it's more comfortable, call it conventional reality. This is how things exist around you. Okay. Low means mind. Okay. Low means mind. By the way, don't forget, we're in a tantra. Nu means hurt.
Hurt?
Hurt.
H-U-R-T?
Yeah, hurt. Man means knock. So what's a lo nu me?
Painless mind.
You'd like that. No, it means unimpaired mind. Unimpaired state of mind. A state of mind which is not messed up by drugs or illness. Also, a mind can be temporarily messed up by outside factors. Inner factors are illness, drugs, alcohol,
and also anger.
And then outer factors are like in Tibetan they say when you're rowing in a boat across a lake and it looks like the trees are moving on the shore, but it's you're what do you call it? Your perspective is changing, but part of your mind can be fooled sometimes into thinking that the trees are moving.
When you're on the subway and the next train's leaving and you think you're moving.
Yeah. That's a very good example. Same thing. Yeah. We're talking about a mind that's not impaired by those kind of inner or outer factors.
So an outer effect might be like an optical illusion.
Yeah. Not messed up by any outer effect. Thing that would affect it.
Which one are you referring to?
Numen means a mind, literally a mind which is not hurt, meaning a mind which is not impaired by either an inner factor such as drugs, illness, or a strong emotion.
Inner facts.
Or an outer factor such as, you know, the perspective of where you are. Lo numen la nawa. Nala means appears.
La to that mind?
Yeah.
Sorry, which one?
La means two?
La means two, T-O. Nala means appear. Wang, you know. That's what it means.
Empowerment?
Yeah, empowerment, but here it means power. Literally, Wang means power. Okay. Wang Qi means by the power. Shak Pam, Shak means established as existing, established as existing. And Tham means just. What they say is that the Svatantrikas, I mean, it's a pretty nice system, of course. They say these flowers exist because two conditions are present. A, they are appearing to me. B, I established them with my mind.
Positive.
Positive is pretty good.
Perceive
is a little tough.
Identify them as
well. I'll give an example. And this is important. Okay. This is a classical example. This is actually, but it helps. They say you have to take the example of a magic show. A magic show. A magician putting on a show. And in India, if you've ever been there, there's this, it's called a shingi gyu in Tibetan, but it's a little stick like that. And the guy, it's a real, you know, traditional magician. He throws the stick on the ground, he makes a spell. He says some holy words or something. And then you see an elephant, and you see a cow. You see a horse. And all that's there is a stick. But because of his spell, you see a horse. But I mean, they used to do this sort of thing. You know, it can work. I've seen similar things. I haven't seen that exactly, but I've seen very similar things in India. I mean, they're very good magicians. But they can do a spell. They say some magic words, or they have some kind of a powder or something, and they throw the stick on the ground, and there's a horse.
And you saw a horse?
I didn't see exactly that, but I saw something similar.
So B's what?
It's like this. It's a kind of magic. I've seen them use this thing. I mean, I didn't see a horse, so I don't know. But they say that two conditions have to be present for that magic spell to work.
You're talking about B now, Michael?
What's B?
In order for the flowers to exist
first. Oh, no, I'm not talking about
you're going to
I'm trying to
else.
Explain through a metaphor what they say. Basically, you have to have two things. The thing has to be appearing, yes. And you have to be perceiving it. How about if we say that?
Okay.
What two things have to be present?
The thing has to be appearing to you, and you have to be perceiving it. Those two conditions have to come together. It has to look like flowers, and I have to see it as flowers. Yeah. What would be the opposite of that? What they're saying is that for those flowers to exist, they have to look like flowers to me, they have to show a flower to me, and I have to see them as flowers. I have to perceive them as flowers. What would be the opposite of that? Why do they make such a big deal about both things being present?
Well, if they're not there, and you don't see them as being there. That's the opposite.
Well, the opposite would be a lower kind of idea. What do normal people in the world say? How do those flowers exist? If I walk out of the room, do those flowers exist? Mm-hmm. According to Satantrika, no.
Well, what about the Buddhists?
That's another story. But what I'm saying is that the tree in the forest question,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
According to Satantrika, if I'm not perceiving it, it doesn't exist.
Oh,
and most Westerners, I mean, most normal people would say, the flowers are there. I mean, whether I'm here or not, whether anyone's perceiving them or not, whether there's any perception of them or not, the flowers are there.
Nothing
so,
exists. There are no appearances.
Right.
Without a
perception.
So it's not referring to you. They're not saying they don't exist. were you.
To you, no.
They don't exist at all.
Well, if
not, not relative well, to you, but at all.
No, not that. They don't say that. If there were no one to perceive them, if there were no one perceiving them, they couldn't be established as existing.
By any of those people or for any of those people that weren't there to perceive them.
Yeah, well, meaning everybody.
At all. Here. They wouldn't be at all.
But
nobody.
I thought this was the position of the
mind only.
Yeah. I thought this was the position I had.
Well, I enjoy it if you ask me, well, what's the difference between them and the prasadika?
Okay.
We have to think about it. We have to talk about it. But what they're saying is two things have to be present. Flowers have to be appearing as flowers, and I have to be seeing them as flowers.
Why would you even need them to exist
because
at all?
Because according to your normal instincts and according to your wrong state of mind, your dentin, your tendency to grasp things as self-existent, there's a part of your mind that exists in your mind all the time which truly believes that those flowers exist out there independent of me perceiving them. You believe they exist over there. There's a part of your mind that truly believes that they are out there.
But the first part of this thing says that they are appearing to me, meaning they are there.
Now, they say this. They say something very interesting. They say they do exist out there, but they don't exist out there on their own. It's a difference. They call it the unique way of being and the way of being. They have a way of being on their own. Yeah. Those flowers have a way of being on their own. But it is not unique. They don't exist out there on their own. They do exist out there. Otherwise they couldn't appear to me. They have some existence out there, but it's not out there what?
In here.
On their own.
What does on their own mean?
Independently.
Independent of me. Providing my half of seeing them.
And so when you don't see them, they don't vanish. They're still there. They do vanish.
No.
They're not there.
They have no existence.
They disappear.
So every time you walk out of a room, the house disappears?
Beyond their appearing to me.
Crazy.
No. Well, they say, well, Buddha perceives that house. Or you perceive that house with your memory.
Oh, then it's just a function of memory.
And around the house see it too. You don't have to see things directly. You can think them with your memory. You can perceive them with deduction.
So is the presence
and that's valid for them?
Somewhere in you.
Yeah, and by the way, the Buddha perceives all of this.
Right, so it's all there.
Is that valid for them as a...
Yeah, they would say that.
Perception.
Yeah, we're studying, the book we're studying is the study of omniscience.
So it seems very important to me, the definition, always qualify it, that they appear to you.
Yeah, what would be the opposite? I mean, would be the thing, for the thing to exist on its own. It does have its own existence, but that's not on its own. It's not in and of itself. It's not out there by itself. It requires my participation for it to exist. That's the difference.
What would I say would happen if, for instance, you woke up in the middle of the night, you were a little groggy, the flowers were there, the light was out, and you didn't perceive them as flowers, you perceive them as some other object.
Beautiful question, beautiful question. Lo nume. Grogginess is an internal factor.
That would be an impairment.
Good question.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a good question. Yeah.
So the Madhyamaka Prasangika position says that the way in which we perceive that the nature of things depends upon the way in which we perceive it and label it.
Are we talking Patanjali or Prasangika?
Well, I'm asking the difference.
Oh, I was afraid somebody would start that.
It seems to me they're the same.
They are different. I don't want to get into it too much. I mean, Rinpoche also told me don't confuse them. This is natural. Very similar in many ways. But remember that in Prasangika, the emphasis was on a suitable collection of parts and a state of mind which was also suitable, giving it the name of that thing and the concept of that thing. It's a little bit different. But it's very useful. You can see how all these lower schools' ideas of how things exist around you are very useful and how they're leading up to Prasangika. They're almost not like, technically they are contradictory, but they're almost like flowing into Madhyamika. You know, they may be ultimately wrong, but they certainly are a nice way to get into the Prasangika viewpoint. And also, I think the Yogacara, the mind-only school, is very, very interesting and very close to setting your mind into the right mood of seeing the real position. But this is, I like this position. The other part of this, which I'm not going to write here, is that's the whole thing. I can't overload you. But the second part is, it exists. The first part is, it exists through appearing to you, and your mind not affected perceiving it. It exists through those two things. It does not exist through some way of being out there on its own. That's the second part of what they say. What they are denying, we can say it, okay? It does not...
Is this the, would you say the translation from La Nyang Wang
Di?
No.
Sure.
No.
So do you.
Thank you.
Through, it's appearing to you, it's in your unimpaired way to see it.
I mean, to put it into plain English, simple English.
And that's just dependent.
They say it does exist out there, or else it couldn't fulfill the requirement of appearing to us.
And you said it's dependent origination?
Yeah. It's dependent origination, is that those two things are present.
Okay.
It's appearing to me as flowers, and I'm seeing it as flowers. Those two conditions have met. Therefore, there are flowers here. But it doesn't exist on its own, but it does exist out there.
Depends on those two things.
Well, almost it's the first thing. Existing out there is its appearing to me. Mm-hmm. It's existing out there is it's part of that component of its appearing to me. Okay. If it didn't exist out there, there wouldn't be anything to appear to me in the first half of the two components.
Aren't you then inferring that it does exist out there?
It does exist out there. I'm saying it does exist out there according to the
standard of your perception,
but not on its own. No.
Can you explain like a wave and the radio receiver and the wave that go to the radio and then it come up the?
Yeah, you can say that the wave is appearing to the.
Yeah, it has to be a receiver,
and the receptor has to be there also.
Right.
Yeah, like that. That's okay. That's a nice example. So what is it in their school for something to exist self-existently? If it exists out there on its own, without depending on these two things happening, appearing to me and me seeing it. Anything that could exist the opposite way of that would be what?
Gotcha.
Self-existent. Gotcha. That's gotcha. Yeah, I'll say it again. Because like two people got it. The way it really does exist deceptively and convincingly is that it appears to me and I see it. The way it doesn't exist... is out there on its own. And that's it. That's the gotcha. Anything that could exist out there on its own is a gotcha. That's a self-existent thing.
Which is the way we see.
Which is
things.
The way you're... We're going to get to that.
Is there anything that is gotcha?
Gotcha doesn't exist, but if it did exist, it would be a tissue that exists out there on its own, independent of my perception.
What about emptiness?
That's a different thing. Emptiness is the absence of the gotcha. Emptiness is the fact that nothing exists out there on its own.
But isn't there an existence of emptiness?
Sure. The fact that nothing exists out there on its own exists. The fact that there's no elephant in this room exists.
Right. But that's not
like,
a gotcha.
Not at all.
That negation is not...
Right.
Speaking of material things, nothing exists then.
Whoa.
Oh, everything exists.
Yeah, no, that's right. There's sort of a definitional tautology in there, where, not to waste your time, anyway.
But the thing is,
slippery.
So you perceive those things around you. That's fine. We're not negating that. We're not negating that the flower appears to you and you see it. That's fine. That's the way the flower exists, conventionally. Okay? You see that. But if I ask you, but by the way, that's what's really going on. But if I ask you what's going on, you would say, oh yeah, the flower's out there. The flower's out there. It's not part of my eye or part of my brain or whatever. It's out there on its own.
You're saying it's out there independent, not dependent
on
how you perceive it.
Yeah, on its own. Yeah, independent of me. It's out there. It exists over there. Independent of my perceptions. Independent of my mind. Independent of my mental images. It exists over there, out there on its own. That's grasping to self-existence. That's ignorance. You don't always think that. You don't get up in the morning and drink your coffee and sit there and look at the coffee and think, gee, the coffee's out there on its own. But it's always assumed. It's always in your mind. It's always in the back of your mind. So I ask you, oh, so the state of mind which is holding the coffee cup, is that wrong? Is there a coffee cup?
No. Yes.
Yes.
But we didn't get there yet.
Okay. So, Michael, let's say that there's a planet that nobody's discovered yet, that nobody has any concept of. Does it exist by
according to
definition?
Buddhism, the definition of existence, and this is off the front thing, okay? You don't have to write this down. Is that which is perceived by a mind which is not messed up. If any state of mind or any consciousness can be aware of the thing in any method, don't forget deduction, then the thing exists.
Let's say nobody's even...
The Buddha
no
is omniscient.
Oh, so...
The Buddha
because there's so many Buddhas, they're always there.
It doesn't take so many, it just takes one.
Right. There's at least one.
Yeah.
He's always perceiving everything.
He's omniscient, yeah.
So,
and every
okay.
second he's perceiving everything. Past, future, present, all universes, he perceives at one moment. Therefore those things exist.
But if you say
okay.
that...
Even things which no other being is aware of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If the coffee cup doesn't exist without me perceiving it, isn't that very, it sounds very selfish to me that nothing can exist that I can't see. It seems like the opposite. That seems very self-grasping.
No. All they're saying is that the coffee cup, you are contributing to the existence of the coffee cup.
But if everybody else was in the room and the coffee cup was here and I left, I'm saying because I think the coffee cup doesn't exist. That sounds
no,
very
didn't
no. We are already
the coffee cup.
Didn't say that. The coffee cup still exists. Someone is still seeing the coffee cup.
Oh, it doesn't have to be you.
No.
Anybody.
No.
Oh.
No.
But this is where you're confused.
That's her question because there are Buddhas in the universe that perceive all things that exist. Therefore, those things exist.
What you're saying, though, right?
Things that no man will ever see. You know, a little dirt cloud on the other side of Pluto. You know, it's there because the Buddha perceived it.
Well, what you're saying, if I understand it correctly, is just that that coffee cup no longer exists for her because she's left the room. She's not thinking about it.
No.
She's not seeing it.
No, she has a remembrance of it. She has it. That is also a kind of l'ennemis, her memory of it.
So once you perceive,
so all our mental functions are. I mean, all our thinkings
don't think
are
that direct
part of
perception
it.
Is the only way to perceive something. We're going to study that a lot. You know, deduction, belief of an authoritative person, things like that. Those are all ways to perceive something. So I ask you again. So I'll go around the room. Check. So,
yes.
Fred.
The answer is yes.
Now we start on the left. According to this hypothesis. What are the two things that have to be present for me to perceive the flower?
That I have to perceive it, and
yeah.
The one before that I find it.
And they have to appear to me.
And they have to appear there.
From their job is to appear to me. My job is to see them.
Okay.
If both of us are doing our job, they exist.
Why don't we have to say we or I? Wouldn't it be better if we say
everybody.
Someone?
Okay, somebody.
That's what's confusing everybody
okay.
here.
So Nina,
anyone.
If I'm being very and insistent, and I'm saying there must be two things there. It has to be appearing to me, and I have to be seeing it for it to exist. Who am I trying to argue with? What do other people think? What do people think who never heard about all this? If I say, how does that, those flowers exist?
They're crazy.
they would say they exist, what?
They exist independently of you.
Out there on their own. Yeah.
Okay. Self-existent.
Yeah, okay. That's what we're trying to deny. That is gacha. Anything that could exist out there on its own is what we deny in this school.
I got some really strong gotcha going here. My mind keeps saying, well, they're in the field, they're growing. I've never seen them. Certainly they're growing.
The Buddha sees them. And you're seeing them right now by deduction.
At this point.
Right now you're seeing by deduction a field from which these flowers came, which you deduce, probably correctly, that there are other similar flowers growing there. And you have a mental picture of this field with the flowers, and there's a little 1 foot hole in them because someone pulled out these flowers. Yeah. That's a perception. That's
fine. Yeah, my point is that past doesn't spring to reality just because I all of a sudden deduced it at this moment in time.
And it does if your deduction is airtight, which it's not. If it were airtight, you could say that they really do exist. But we don't really know. Maybe this field was gone. Maybe they plowed it under. Maybe this was grown in a greenhouse. Your deduction is not airtight. I mean, your perception right now of the field from which these flowers grew is probably slightly faulty because you're making so many
assumptions. Yeah.
What do you call it? There's so many variables in this picture that we can't really be sure what the place looked like where these flowers came from. But we can be sure with airtight deduction that there was some kind of earth that was watered and there was some heat. You can deduce that perfectly, correctly. There was those things. There was a place like that. And you are perceiving it and it is appearing to you. Yeah. And therefore you exist.
My point is I just deduced it at this moment in time. Right. But it just didn't spring to reality. It happened just because I deduced it at this moment.
Get away from the I. Somebody has.
Somebody.
The Buddha.
The person who grew the flowers did. Yeah. Right? So it existed. It exists.
As long as anybody does.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay.
What is this? Deduct.
Deduct means I hear the dog barking. So I think that man must have walked outside. I can't see the man. But the dogs are barking, so I can think, oh, there, the dogs are barking, so the guy must be outside. There must be some guy there. So I am seeing that guy, but only by deduction. I'm not seeing him with my eyes. I'm seeing him with my mind. And it's dangerous. Deductions are more dangerous than direct perception. Maybe he's not there. Maybe something else happened. Maybe the other dog.
Come out with a gun and shoot somebody. He's got to give you a pie.
You mean like imagine deduction? You're just thinking about
deduction means perceiving something because you have a good reason. Perceiving something with your mind because you have a good reason. The good reason is what? The dog is barking. Then what do I see? I see some man walking.
It's an educated guess.
Okay, awful quiet. Maybe you need to take a break. Take a break, and then we'll
take some cookies.
Then what he's going to do is what the book does is they give a common example. They give a metaphor. They're going to talk about a magic show and how the thing happens, and that'll help a lot for you to understand what he's talking about. I remember
everybody uses the magic show
sample. It's a term.
Well, it appears in a. It comes from a scriptural source. That's why people use it. Different people explain it different ways. Okay, take a break. Have some.
Turkey left over. All right.
Yeah. That's where gotcha came from.
What do you think?
You said the old traditional magic show, which probably no one's seen in a long time.
No, this is real magic.
Nobody that we know of.
Okay, so that's... So they say there has to be two things going on. What are they?
Well, there has to be an audience.
No, for the horse, for the appearance of the horse to be there, what has to be going on? For you to see a horse, what has to go on?
The spell?
The wood has to appear as a horse, mm-hmm. and...
You have to see it as a horse.
So you're saying the basis and the pursuit.
There has to be something appearing as a horse, and then there has to be a state of mind that thinks it sees a horse.
But that appearing, I thought you said that that existed, but...
Now, wait, let me go one more step, and then see if it answers what you're saying. They say, if the process of Atantra, in their example, they say, if the thing were not appearing as a horse, then what?
You wouldn't see it.
What was it? Then everything could appear as a horse.
What?
If it didn't take the piece of wood if the piece of wood didn't have to be there to appear as a horse, then you would see horses everywhere where there wasn't any piece of wood also.
Right.
Okay, that again.
If seeing this horse didn't depend on this looking like a horse, then everything you looked at would look like a horse to you. Therefore, they say, the first component is very necessary. It's necessary for the flowers to appear as flowers. If me seeing flowers didn't depend on those flowers appearing as flowers, then everything I looked at would seem to be flowers.
Mm-hmm. Assuming you have...
There must be something in the object that looks like flowers. Mm-hmm. That's what they're... I guess let's boil it down to that. There has to be something out there that is appearing as a flower. Otherwise, everything would appear like a flower to me.
Or everything could appear like a flower to me.
Should appear. Why not? If it didn't take... You need flowerness out there for the thing to appear the flower, and everything I look at would be a flower.
So then you derive that something in there has to look like a flower for it to look like a flower?
Right. They say there must be something flower about it out there, or else everything would appear like a flower.
Assuming that you have an unimpaired, that the perceiver has an unimpaired consciousness.
But so it exists, but not of its own.
Right. Right. Well, they're saying, they keep saying there have to be two conditions going on here. There has to be something flower out there. Or if I could see flowers without any seeing flowers out there, then I could see flowers everywhere.
Who
said
not necessarily?
Why? Why do you think?
Because you may just mistake the object.
We're talking new me.
Correct consciousness.
I want to make sure I got this right. You're the first class I teach in. Good. Are you alright? If I didn't need the appearance of the piece of wood to see a horse, if there didn't have to be a stick there to appear as a horse, then everything I look at could appear as a horse.
That example seems more confusing than that.
It's a very good example.
But it's good, though.
Because there's a lot of other things going on.
Because there's the magic. Horse.
There's no horse.
Right, that's tough.
So then it's the first part of that thing. The first part of that then appearing to me doesn't apply to that situation because there isn't a thing that it has
something.
Horseness or whatever. It,
right,
but
you're
it's
right.
Only it's
you're
only
right.
What you've been.
Right.
It's only what's in your mind.
In that case, you're an impaired mind.
If it's only what's in your mind, then he wouldn't need the stick. He's turning the stick. He's doing a spell on your eyes, and then the stick is appearing as a horse. But it's not only depending on... There has to be a stick out there to appear as a horse. Yeah, you can say that it should have been appearing as a stick. That's a little confusing. The point is that there is something out there to appear as a horse.
Well, first it appears as a stick, and then he makes a spell, and then it appears as a horse. So it's like...
Okay. So... Suppose the second condition weren't there. What's the second condition?
You didn't see it as a horse.
You're seeing, yeah, you're seeing it as a horse. What? Well, why, we'll get into later. If that weren't there, then what's the problem?
And how would you know it was flowers?
He
how would anybody
here.
Know it was flowers?
It's flowers, it's a horse.
Everybody sees
why
the thing.
What you need is the state of mind under a spell to see the horse. What if the state of mind under a spell wasn't there? What would happen?
See a stick.
Then the state of mind.
What happens when somebody else walks up later who wasn't there when the spell was cast?
See a stick.
All these people are running away from this horse, and he's saying, "Well, what's going on? There's just a stick there." So they say you need the state of mind which sees it also. Which is under the spell.
Then how important is the stick in this thing? I mean,
yeah,
the
stick
I mean,
is 50%. The stick has to be appearing as a horse.
It can't just be
poof. There's a horse without a stick, right?
No. This is the concept of emanation in magic. Is that you need to work with something that you make this thing there. This is just a principle of old Indian magic. You got to have a thing that you cast a spell on everybody, and they see the thing as a horse. There must be something out there, otherwise you can't cast a spell. What are they going to see as a horse?
Keep a Michael. Oh, wasn't it? What's
this? This is the idea of chukku, of emanation. There has to be something to appear as a thing. You know, this wicked old witch is trying to show herself as a beautiful lady because she has a spell. But there has to be the wicked old witch there.
But if you just sit in meditation in a cave for enough years, you create a chukku without anything.
No.
Yeah, what about Milarepa?
What are you talking about?
I'm
not talking about religious things. I'm talking about when a person can make himself appear as a bird.
Okay, so.
Or a person can make himself appear as a fox.
Okay.
There has to be a person to appear as a fox.
Sure.
So there has to be some material that appears as a thing. So now we got three people involved in this thing. Does the magician see the horse?
No.
Yeah, maybe.
Depends on
who was there when the spell was cast.
Oh, but he knows it's not a horse.
So he doesn't believe it. Now we're getting a very interesting thing. Okay. Now we're into the interesting part.
He sees it, but he doesn't.
We're talking about three different people here. Let's talk first about the spectators who were there when the spell was cast. That's the first person we want to talk about. The people who were there when the spell was cast. Do they see a horse?
Yes.
Do they believe there's a horse there?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. They believe the stick has turned into a horse.
Except for the magician.
They believe there's a horse there, and they see a horse there. Sound familiar?
Yes. So they wouldn't be able to. They wouldn't be able to have the horse appear unless they believed it.
No.
That's not true, because the second person we're going to talk about is the magician himself. Does he see a horse? Was he there when the spell was cast?
He sees a horse, but he doesn't believe
it. He sees it, but he knows there's no such thing there. Okay, it's an illusion. He knows it's an illusion. He cast a spell. He was there when the holy words were spoken. We're going to talk about, by the way, how that's supposed to be able to work. No, we will. It's the last subject of this class. A mantra. It's actually a mantra. If the word mantra comes from those old days, he can say some special words, and then everyone in the place will see a horse. How can that happen? We're going to talk about it. So he's also heard the words, and he also sees a horse. But he knows it's not real. So now you've got two kinds of people. One is the spectators who were there when the spell was cast. They see a horse, and they believe the horse is there. Then you have the magician. He was there when the spell was cast. He sees a horse, but
he doesn't believe
it's real. Now what about Joe Blow, who walks up 10 minutes later after the spell is cast, and he sees all this big... In India, it's great. You see this big ring of people, and you know what's going on. There's a magician in the middle of the crowd, you know, and you're always trying to get in to see these things, you know. And so you get in later, and you look down there, and he's going like this, and there's a stupid little stick on the ground, and everybody's going, you know. That's the third person. Does he see a horse?
No.
Does he believe in the horse?
No.
No. Now, who do you think those three people correspond to?
Arya, so regular sentient beings. The magician is beings who perceive emptiness, you know, who intellectually understand emptiness.
Well, we'll talk about it. The first people, you're right, are people who have not perceived emptiness. The book doesn't say directly, Okay. So you can explain it either way. But basically, someone who has no idea of emptiness, he sees things as self-existent and he believes they are. I'm sorry, the book does say, it does say sasakewa. A person who has not perceived emptiness, that's it. He sees it as self-existent and he believes it as self-existent. He's like the person who was there when the cat, spell was cast, the spectator. Oh, don't do that. Then, second one, the magician is, the example they give in the book is someone at the three last bhumis. That's the ninth, right?
8 to 10.
Oh, that was a kind of bodhicitta. No, we're just talking 8, 9, 10. Okay, Bhumis.
Bhumis,
eight, nine,
that
ten.
Is B-O-O-M-I.
B-H-U-M-I.
Oh, dear. B-H-U-M-I.
But don't worry about it. They, according to the book, they see things as something different, but they don't believe them. That's not what I told you.
Right.
But this is... this is Svatantrika.
We fall into that category.
We're still researching what the Prasangika is. Huh? Svatantrika.
Would we fall into that category?
Yeah, but I adjust it now. I mean, this is clearly, the book clearly says that at this point, that those people on that stage, bodhisattvas on the last three bodhisattva levels, see, but they don't believe it. When they are not in emptiness meditation.
When they're not?
This is when they're walking around after their...
they don't have any context.
We're going to talk about that.
They experience this when they're
not... I'm saying people on the last three bhumis, who are not in direct perception of emptiness, see things as self-existent. But don't believe it. They know they're wrong.
Michael, can I ask you a question?
Say one more time.
Yes, thank you. Would we fall into that category?
Probably not, if you haven't seen emptiness directly.
So you must have seen emptiness directly then.
Sure, this is very high level. Just,
so then,
just before Buddhahood. Low. Push this. Top left hand button.
Yeah. Just go snap.
Low.
Hi.
Mr. Fanny?
Yeah, okay. Okay. Why don't you
tell me about Tantika? Okay, so it's those.
Yeah, he's the last people that will win.
So you it's someone who perceived emptiness in deep meditation and it comes out of it and knows that what they're seeing, that's
he's
the one
wrong.
Who cannot help himself.
Right, right. Despite himself.
Despite himself.
Right. He's the... he's the magician.
Yeah.
Magician, he knows there's no horse there, but he can't help it. He sees a horse.
And the newcomer.
Now how about the newcomer? What did I say
not
last
the
time?
Buddha. The Buddha sees the stick. That sees the stick and the horse.
It doesn't have
the
sees
the way everybody
good.
Else sees.
Good. You know, I was wondering why it wasn't the Buddha, and that's pretty good reason why not. Yeah, he sees the stick and the horse.
Yeah, the Buddha
he sees
seeing
the horse?
It as a stick would not depend on them
so
not having been there when they're
punched. Who doesn't see either? Who is it that doesn't see either? Who doesn't believe there's a horse and doesn't see a horse either? Who is the guy who came later? All he sees is a big crowd. No, exactly, precisely. It's the person who's in the direct perception of emptiness. And they say a non-Buddha who's in the direct perception.
Yeah.
A non-Buddha sentient being, a non-Buddha living being, who's perceiving emptiness directly.
Well, that's not even necessary because the Buddha doesn't have to go into a state of meditation to perceive emptiness, correct?
That's true.
Doesn't see the stick.
But they call it a state of meditation. They call it.
Just
always
emptiness.
The same. They are like the spectator who came later. They don't see things as self-existent, and they don't believe things as self-existent.
So the moment that they're looking at the stick, they are perceiving actual emptiness. Is that what you're saying? It's like perceiving emptiness.
Well, now we're kind
of,
I don't think you can stretch the metaphor.
It's like a parallel. It will be the same.
Well, I don't know. They don't go farther than that. They just want to compare those
two. The first two are the best.
They don't talk about...
the person in the crowd who sees both the stick and
the deception that's going on. I believe, my feeling is that you could say that the spell is our tendency to see things as... What do you think? It is Dong Thin. It is ignorance.
A really exaggerated.
It makes you think that something's there and it's not there. But the perception is not ignorance. It's seeing a horse. But that's another thing.
It's a little different.
Yeah. Seeing a horse, but then taking it one step further and believing that you're really seeing a horse, that's the thing in this case, right?
So we'll recap. Does the flower... Is the vase with the flower what we deny exists?
No.
Because everything is okay. It's appearing as flowers, and I'm seeing it as flowers, and my mind is not messed up. I'm not drunk, I'm not hallucinating. Normal state of mind, and those flowers are appearing to me, therefore the flowers are still. If the flowers, any flower which could exist out there on its own without my participation is
gotcha,
because that's the opposite of the way it really exists.
Without
okay.
anyone.
Right, okay. And that's what they say the gotcha. That's what gotcha is. Gotcha means the thing we deny. So how does it apply to your real life? I say that whenever you have an emotion which would cause you to do something wrong, it is aimed at a gotcha.
Oh.
It is directed at a thing that doesn't even exist. And the proof of that is, you know, when someone comes up to you and says, so-and-so is bad, he's a bad person. And you say, well, I kind of like him. No, he's bad. His nature is bad. Then I say, well, how can I like him? Does he have a good nature and a bad nature at the same time? Or am I not seeing... Normally the person will say, oh, you don't perceive the truth. He's really bad. And you just haven't seen what he's done to me. That's ignorance. And it's only that state of mind that believes itself that can have anger. Because if you understood that he's what? Blank. He's blank. He's a blank screen. If you understood that, then you can't get angry at him because you know who's projecting. Who makes him better?
You are.
Well, you want to shoot yourself in the toe, it's okay. But don't shoot him. It's not his fault. He's blank.
So you can still get angry, you just change the focus of the anger to yourself.
Well, if you're going to get anger, the only proper anger, which is called regret, is sadness. You're thinking, well, why did I do that?
You're pissed at yourself, too.
You're pissed in a way that you're kind of... To be pissed would be seeing yourself as something that's been in a way. It's just this kind of calm sadness about that I messed up, therefore I'm having to see this thing. And by goodness, so now that I know, understand Buddhism, I absolutely will not respond in the normal way, because that's exactly what would make me see him again, what would force me to see him again.
Just going with what you define, though, as the dependence of this thing. You have the two components, the thing out there, and you perceiving them with an unimpaired mind. You could have a person out there. You could be perceiving them as bad. Two components are there. You can still have that anger, badness, whatever, just from the base definition, it seems to me.
Let me think about it. I know what you're saying. According to Satantika.
Yeah, and you're sort of adding on all the other stuff outside of this definition.
He's bad out there. No, I can't... Once I admit my participation, I can't be angry.
You could say I perceive him as bad. It's my perception.
which I've called.
Oh, but aren't you adding on to the definition where what the cause of the perception is? That's outside the definition.
What's making me see the flowers?
What's causing your perception
of the flowers? Yeah, that's why you have to join a little yoga tour.
Yeah.
Which is accepted by the other people. That part of the yoga tour is accepted by everybody. You know, the same seed is creating that appearance and it's creating my perception. The same karmic seed is creating both. That's their main point. So gacha, the benefit of gacha is that you can't be angry anymore, because the thing you're angry at, if what I'm saying is very interesting, if you can get anger, or if you can get desire, particularly to the point that you would hurt someone to get away or to get something, you're focused on a thing that doesn't even exist. Whatever you want, or whatever you hate, doesn't even exist. And that's the way that the emptiness can help you. Not to believe that he doesn't exist, or anything else. Obviously he exists. Mm-hmm. The Buddhism doesn't say try to pretend that this asshole, excuse me, at work doesn't exist. You can pretend that all you want, and he's still going to be there the next day. And that's obvious. So why knock your head out over, you know, this idea of emptiness that says he doesn't exist? Because the next day when you go to work, he's still going to be there. You know, that's not the point. He's blank. You are forced by your pastiche to see him as the way you do. And if you don't like it, then stop doing bad deeds. Don't try to hurt him.
The way you identify the flowers is that it has a characteristic of being about this large, and it has this pink color, and it doesn't wiggle a lot, and maybe it has a perfume. And the way I perceive your boss is that he's about yay tall, and he's a little overweight, and he's got this weird look on his face, and he keeps yelling. Now, what is it about him that doesn't exist?
Any yellingness, or any ugliness to me, which is not coming about through my own perception. And that's exactly what Satanta Buddha is trying to say.
I'm sorry, I need you to say that again, please. So
you're trying to say he's not independent of my perceptions of him.
No, but you've asserted that the flower exists, and we've asserted that your boss exists.
There is an existence of my boss out there.
But he's also yelling.
He's yelling, but it can't exist without my participation.
Well,
so if you weren't there, he wouldn't be yelling. What's your problem, buddy?
Potentially very elucidating, and I think there's a very slender something here that will really illuminate it all, and I wish that you could pursue it, because identify the flowers by characteristics that we, it's, you know, the sociologists call it a, you know, whatever, perception type of thing.
No,
and so we identify
exactly
your boss
you
by
do.
His disagreeable behavior. Even though I've never met this person, I now understand that he makes everyone think he's disagreeable.
No, there is no
we
such
all
person.
Make
I'm just using the example.
Right.
In fact, there is no such person in this particular, in my particular time. But anyway, I'm just saying.
The stick has an existence, the flower has an existence, and the boss has an existence.
Oh, no. He looks angry, and I see him as angry.
So,
that's fine. He's an angry man.
But, okay, and
but he's not really angry. He's a horse. He appears to be a horse because of the spell, and I see him as a horse because of the spell. But
when he becomes a stick again, what is he?
He's not really an angry man by himself.
When he becomes a stick, what is he?
He's not permanently.
Just
then I stop getting angry, and then I don't do any bad deeds. And then I reach Nirvana.
And it doesn't matter what
he
is.
He stops yelling?
Is the answer.
No, he doesn't yell at somebody else.
Well, what about like Li Pei?
Sure.
The trouble with it's all not true.
No, what about
you? He's blank. He's not blank. There is something there. It may be very subtle.
Oh.
Can you identify
what
it is that
exists? Now I've got a question. I mean, there is a redness of his face. There is a
big, wide mouth.
There is a loud volume, louder than normal. Okay? But that it's an angry man, it can't be that until I see it that way.
Well, what is it that you have imputed to it that it isn't
happening?
He could
be singing a chorale, you know? If I had the karma to see it that way, he would be.
But isn't there this concept of there being some sort of a consensus?
In fact, by the way, what I just said is how I can change reality. It's how I can reach nirvana. If it weren't the way I just described it, nirvana is impossible. In particular, secret Buddhism is impossible.
But wouldn't it be possible that, let's say, if you saw somebody angry, right? But it did not affect you. I mean, like, your boss was yelling at you, but it did not faze you. You know, really,
Aquinas gave a good example. He said, if you see a guy comes up with two fruits, I read this in some article somewhere. He comes up with two fruits, and one is kind of moldy, and one is really bright. And he takes the bright, clean one, and he gives you the moldy one. What he said was something like, you wouldn't really have any sense of injustice if you didn't care about the fruit. Mm. You know, I mean, if you weren't attached to the eating it, you might not even see the difference.
So then the relevance of the power...
But you're talking about... You would see the difference, but it wouldn't matter.
Yeah, but... Yeah. You may see somebody who's angry, but it's not going to affect you.
If you have a boss who screams at you, but it doesn't push your buttons.
Right, exactly.
That's your karma. You have the karma to see something a little bit unpleasant, but you don't have the karma to have a very bad experience also.
So is that person a nasty person?
Of course
then?
He is. Well, so then he's slightly nasty person.
So, but you say he exists because you see it. Are
you talking the difference between making a value judgment and...
No, I mean, if you want to get deeper, even the fact that he's there, which is not what I want to get into right now, but even the fact that he exists, even the fact that the redness and the loudness are there, see, you go down to each level.
So is it even one true is he being, that objects other than sentient beings have the same...
Sure. This house, I mean, you can think this is a very nasty area, or you can think it's a great area because it has a Dharma center here.
I waver.
I need to hear one thing again. You said he's blank. I'm forced by my past deeds to see him this way. If I don't like it, then
be good, because you cannot change the current condition. Mm-hmm. It's a result. That's a principle of Buddhism. Mm-hmm. You cannot change the result.
So you
have to plant new causes.
So you're good to avoid having this happen in the future.
Right. Uh-huh. Self-interested morality.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
But don't think that Buddhism ever says... Buddhism doesn't say that once the sprout came out of the earth, that you can, you know, get back down there, you know, get back in there, you know. It's ridiculous. It will never happen. Once you're suffering, it's too late to do anything. All you can do is work about the future.
So, are you
saying... And that's this big misconception that Buddhists, you know, if he's a good Buddhist and he meditates real good, you know, and then the next time somebody yells at him, he can stay calm or something like that. It's not the point.
No.
You know, I want a world where no one ever yells at me. So I don't have to stay calm about it. And it will come. Because I'm good.
I have a question. How can you fight injustice if you don't perceive evil? Okay, yeah, like you see Hitler, and you say, he's all right, I'm not going to let him get to me, so he murdered 6 million people, he's a communist, go. Or like Liu Kang.
No.
I mean, if you're so neutral to it and you don't respond to anything with any anger, how are you going to fight anything?
That's what the idea of lower nirvana is. That's the difference between that and Buddhahood. Okay, so Buddhahood, the point is that once you reach nirvana, even if you wanted to suffer, you couldn't. Yeah. Whatever Li Peng or Hitler there are in the universe, whatever they can do will never affect you. It can never cause any suffering. Are you aware that they exist and that they're hurting other people, and that other people have the karma to have Hitler kill them? Yes. And you fight against that, but you fight against it by teaching him morality.
And now you just cast Hitler as this evil character, and it's all coming from you. I mean,
the Buddha is aware of how sentient beings see. I read this, there's this biography on that day about Hitler's girlfriend who made movies and she loved him.
Lady Rife and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Well, there are always a few.
No. The Buddha is never affected by the Hitlers of the universe. He cannot
He cannot suffer.
He perceives you perceiving them hurting you. Yeah. And he'll do whatever he can do that you don't have to have them hurt you anymore.
But he sees them as being equal to you.
He still sees them. If you couldn't discriminate between things that were harmful
I didn't say
and
that.
Things that were...
I didn't say that. They'll never harm you.
But if you talk about an angry man, that angry man is potentially harmful. Just because you don't get angry back doesn't make him less angry.
Oh, should you take steps to restrain a person who is harmful? Of course. That's a good deed.
But then you have to acknowledge that he's angry, that it's not all coming from your... Do you see what I mean?
You can perceive that he's hurting someone else. Yes, you have to do something.
Or intends to hurt you.
But how can you really prevent him from hurting someone else? This is the only... No. No, I tell you again, and I'll tell you many times before the 5 years are over. Maybe after that. If I lie in a diamond negotiation, and the guy takes the bait, and he sells it to me too cheap, what caused the profit?
Something in your past life.
Yeah, good can never come from bad, period. You hear it 1,000 times, and one day it will dawn on you. You know, it's impossible that a bad action would ever create any good result. It's impossible that a good action can ever have a bad result.
No, but the result...
So, if this angry man that you talk about is harming someone else, it had to have come about through some harm that that person did. So, is me killing him going to stop the harm to the other person? Is me killing that person, does that stop the source of the harm to the other person?
No.
It postpones it.
No, they'll have it again. They'll need it again.
It doesn't necessarily postpone it. It could just happen the next second anyway.
Well, then why did the story about the
ship captain?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He killed him for his own benefit, for that guy's benefit.
Right, well, that's the other question, too, and the same thing. Well, wouldn't it prevent them from accumulating that karma?
If he's got the karma to kill that many people, it was just being postponed.
Then you're just putting it off, huh?
No, they had the karma to have the Buddha kill the man before they died because of him.
Yeah, but the guy who was killed...
He didn't have the karma to be killed by the man.
They were saved.
Going back to the example of...
You have the karma
to... You can always... I mean, that's sort of...
No, it's the truth. And again, it's one of those things...
You can say, if I ran out there and grabbed a child who was running around out in the street, you might say, well... You didn't save that child. It was that child's karma not to get run over.
In fact, it must be. It can never be anything else.
So then where does the...
If you say there's any other... If you say there's any other... Well, why does medicine...
Well, if it
work?
Wasn't you, it would have been someone else.
Why does medicine work? Who was it? Somebody in this room. Your uncle was killed by a dentist.
Oh.
No, I mean, he shot some stuff and he died on the chair. Now, why does medicine work for some people and kill other people? You want a self-existent goodness in the medicine. It's not true.
So how do we determine then that helping someone
is
a benefit? You know, if we see this person who's going to go kill that person, and we go to intervene, and we can
say, your motivation is
killed by that person, therefore why should I intervene?
Oh, because we're accumulating virtue for ourselves.
Mainly. Yeah.
Well, that doesn't sound very...
It sounds selfish, mm-hmm. No? I'm sorry. I know people have said that, but that's the way it works. You must help them.
For your own benefit.
In fact, the main benefit is for you. This White Lama, if you want to know what Rinpoche would say at this point, he'd say, look, the helping is obviously a factor in the person being saved. You know, your presence and your making an effort is obviously contributing to the person's being saved. It's not the main cause why the person is saved. Mm. Because some people you help get hurt anyway, and some people you help get help. Therefore, it's not your helping that's the main cause for them getting help.
And so the only
because if it were, every time you help someone, it would come out good. It is a factor, certainly. You know? It contributes, obviously. And if you didn't do it, it wouldn't happen.
And so in terms of helping them, we're not really helping them to benefit them. We're helping them to benefit ourselves.
That's what we're doing.
Well, the result is that it benefits you.
But that essentially then is...
What is their motivation? The motivation
is
this. I should help them. The main reason is that I can become a Buddha, because then I can really help people. because then I can read their minds. I can teach them exactly what they need. I can appear any way, any time, without any effort.
Karma, right?
Exactly the way they need.
You still can't change their karma.
No, you can by you can teach them.
To change their future karma.
Well, you can teach.
Yeah, but will they be actually learning, or will it just be their karma to see you and respond favorably? I mean, that's
they're not contradictory.
So then, when you see the boss who's the jerk, I'm going to use your word, but when you see the boss who's the jerk, okay,
well, if you're
and you don't respond negatively, you know, if you don't get angry yourself in return, is that free will taking advantage of what you've learned, or is that just inevitable? You've got the karma to see this angry boss, but simultaneously have the karma not to be angry, or is it both of those things at the same time?
You have the karma that the teachings affect you to the point where you do the intelligent thing at that moment.
So it could have gone either way. Depends on whether you utilize the teaching that you.
Well, that's what the woman.
Well, free will does come in.
Well, he said something about Saddam Hussein.
Where
also.
Does the free will come from?
Right.
Of karma. Yeah. He said Saddam Hussein was probably a bad man, but his heart went out to him because we supplied him with all those arms.
Right.
What were we doing? What were we thinking? And
but he said abortion. He can understand people killing. I mean, having abortion. I don't understand that.
I don't.
Under certain circumstances.
I don't think so. I don't even think under certain circumstances. Frankly, I don't think so.
Because if
I've never seen that.
What is it? So he talks about it. I don't know if you read it. Did you read the article?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it talks, you know, it sounds like from what I read, it talks about abortion. I don't know where. I can't remember where, but.
That's why I have a problem with this free will concept in karma, you know, because ultimately the free will is from karma.
We'll study it. The Abhidharma say that there is a will which is not a result of karma.
Then not everything is a result of karma.
Thank you.
So therefore, we got problems here.
There are various different
I'll tell you this one thing, and then we'll stop. Because I don't like to go over. Your problem in conceptualizing it is hitting exactly to the point of self-existence. You are. It's insofar as you still have a tendency to think things are self-existent, existent, you are having a problem with this idea. And I just say that. I don't. You know. I just say that. The thing that's bugging everybody about this idea, in Tibetan they say, it strikes on, sooner or later it boils down to ignorance. It's a misperception of the real existence of nothing.
We have it.
Somewhere in there, the reason it seems to you to be a paradox, is that you still have some perception of something there. Okay, all right.
We'll get
anyway,
there. We'll get there.
By the way, just a few announcements. I want to tell you when your last class will be and when your final class.
Isn't it exactly 6 weeks after we start the morning?
Not really.
The 13th of December, which is 2 weeks from tonight?
Yes.
There will be no class. Monday the 13th. December. There'll be no class. Because I have something. I have to go confess my bad deeds. It takes a couple hours. Monday, December 13th. Okay, no class. Which means then that you have your last, you have your review on Thursday the 16th. That's when you really want to come because you get you get a preview. You get me pretty much telling you what's on the final, although I'll never admit that. And then on Monday the 20th, you have your final. And I really will give you the spring, but I just didn't get around to it. She collects degrees. She has an aerospace degree, Greek degree. He's been teaching an incredible thing on proving past life.
Yeah, I know, Michael. I called Peter, but he never called me back.
And he got a little miffed because some people didn't show up who were signed up for it. So he practically said he would stop pretty soon. So if anyone has any interest, I encourage you to come out Wednesday night at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he not do it on a weekend night?
Or Sunday. If he doesn't stop this Wednesday, I'll let you know on Thursday.
So maybe Sunday.
Sunday's a better day.
But also it's 1 o'clock.
Well, I'll try to twist his arm.
He always teaches at night? On Sunday night?
By the way, if you ever go down and you can...
In the afternoon, it would be great.
Free or whatever. I mean, there's no charge. You can sleep there for free. Maybe you can come back the next month. I mean, I can use it. You just get up there and come in. Can I talk to him? You're welcome to do that.
Yeah, he's got about 10 more minutes to go before his class is finished. Let me see if he'll be here tomorrow. Is he here tomorrow? No, all day tomorrow he's here. Yeah.
Hey, off.
What? Oh, yeah. Yeah, so if there's any way, but I'll let you know Thursday if he's going to continue that. It's incredible. I've never done this stuff.
So why does he want to stop? Michael?
It's the only proof for it.
Nobody showed up.
No, a lot of people showed up, but some people that he wanted to show up didn't. So the rest
some
of them are like, why are you coming up? Yeah, I didn't know he was going to stop.
I'll do the dishes.
Sorry to keep you waiting.
I'll do the dishes.
One dishwasher, one vacuum.
Maybe the dishes are washed.
I'll do whatever that is.
Do you have any vacuum?
I did the last 2.
Did you do it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good night.
Sasi Bhagi Jashin Etasham Virat